These men are consummate snowball artists. They use sense and nerve gases to induce hallucinations. People think they're seeing ghosts. And they call these bozos who conveniently show up to deal with the problem with a fake electronic light show.
Everything was fine with our system until the power grid was shut off by Dickless here.
They caused an explosion.
Is this true?
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
All right.
Well, that's what I heard.
Man, we had an awesome interview with Dr. Alan Brown, and you heard it here first, or you're going to hear it here first. We've already set up next Halloween's headliner.
Spoiler alert.
You'll hear about that in the interview. But most importantly, we're getting ready to do our drawing, and we've gotten some good responses in the email thing, in the Google machine. A lot of people have
called you beautiful.
You know, I'm not going to say any names, but one of the emails said Mark is a sexy beast.
I know which one that was.
I'm not going to say their name in case they win. Y'all will think it's rigged. But you're going to know it's not rigged because we're going to do it live. We're going to do a Facebook Live of the drawing. Don't forget, if you want a copy of Dr. Alan Brown's new book, autographed copy, mind you, you need to email us at killpopculture69@gmail.com, and in the subject line type the word book. And some people took me kind of literal on that, and some of them in the subject line, it literally says the word book. Not the word book, but the word book.
Yeah.
That sentence.
The word book.
Those three words. Is that three words? The word book.
Yeah, I would do that too.
I'm not going to say who did that, but you know who you are. And it was Shannon Byers.
And I'm going to reiterate, but I'm going to pick favorites this time.
I'm not going to say who it was.
All right,
but they've been on the show before, and their name rhymes with
Men and Myers.
Schman and Schmires.
And I'm going to reiterate and say in the body part. Not the body parts. In the body area of the email, I'm going to be partial this time and say, you have to say Jeremy's sexy. Or Jeremy's a beautiful beast or creature. Made me sound cool.
Is everybody excited for That So Sick Fest?
Yeah.
I can't reach the shameless promotion bell right now. Well, you did it too early. But just know that... ringtone was for us, and we had band practice.
We had
Kill J. Ooh. We had band practice last week sometime.
And the week before that. Two weeks in a row.
We've still got it.
Boom, 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 boom.
We've still got it.
Boom, 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 boom. Okay, that's enough.
Yeah, that's way too much of that. I need to check the weather. Is it going to be cold? Do I need to wear a scarf?
Like late, early morning into the wee hours. It's supposed to get down in the 50s. You might want your turtleneck. Because I know how your vocal cords get when they get out in the cold.
I'll wear a multicolored scarf.
I'm going to call you Doctor Who.
What else do we need to announce before we go into this?
You got one more weekend.
Yeah, this isn't the last Halloween-y podcast you're going to hear from us. We're going to be, the next episode, you're going to hear us live. Well, not live, but
ish.
A-live.
Maybe.
We're going to be broadcasting from the Athens Jailhouse. We had a really good interview with Ms. Harlow. She is a member of the Monroe County Historical Society. And she gave us a lot of information about that place. It's really interesting history stuff. So,
now I could have sat there and talked to her longer.
We were there for a while.
Yeah.
She's a Cowboys fan, I think.
She's a Dak fan.
Well, you know, who isn't? Oh, God, I just opened up a...
Oh, you did.
At least we'll get some attention now.
Email us at UFOCulture69.
Don't say our email address. Dallas haters will flood our servers. All right, let's jump into this interview, man.
Roll that beautiful bean footage.
After this commercial, huh?
Ching, ching.
Are you looking to reach a wider audience? Are you looking to get your name out there? Are you looking to go to the next level with advertisement? Well, think no more. Advertise with us at Kill Pop Culture.
Just tell us a little bit about your business and leave the rest to us. We'll build you a state-of-the-art commercial to be played every episode.
We're only going to take on about one or two more sponsors, so be sure to grab these slots up before they're gone.
We have plans to fit any budget, and we can build a commercial for any type of business.
Email killpopculture69@gmail.com today.
Got Dr. Alan Brown on the phone, the author of Ghosts of Mississippi's Golden Triangle. Of course, you were on our show last Halloween season as well. Sounds like you've been really busy doing this book tour. How's that been going so far?
Well, it's going pretty well. I've been going to a lot of book signings, which is a good thing. I'm giving a ghost tour of town where my university is. It's Livingston, Alabama, so I'm doing that tomorrow. But I've got a book signing before I do the ghost tour, so I'm definitely getting my 15 minutes of fame this October.
Do you kind of feel the momentum kind of build with each release, with each book?
That's a good question. I think it does, because I keep hoping that this is the one that is going to really, really take off and possibly sell outside of the state. Most of the books that people write for the history press are regional books, and so they have a pretty small market for the most part. But I'm really, really trying to write a book that will cover more ground. In fact, this past year, I wrote I just finished a book called Haunted Alabama. It's the only book that covers the entire state. And hopefully that will come out next October.
Oh, that'll be perfect. Yeah, that'll be great. Hey, we'll have you back on the show every year. You'll have a book every year, an interview every year.
Oh, that'll be great. I'd love to do it.
Yeah, you're with, am I saying this right, Arcadia Publishing?
Yes, it is. It is Arcadia. Arcadia bought out the History Press, but the History Press is still affiliated with under Arcadia.
Okay, I'm looking at the book now, and it's got it says Haunted America at the bottom. Is that
yeah,
part of a series or something?
That's their series.
Okay.
And they have books from all over the United States. And like I said, most of these are regional, they focus on small towns, individual towns. The book I just did on Golden Triangle, of course, is a regional book.
Okay. Well, tell me just a little bit more about this ghost tour you just mentioned. What does all that entail?
Well, I've been doing this for 10 years, and we meet in the historic part of our town, and Livingston is a very small town. It was founded after 1835, after the signing of the Treaty of Dancing Rabbit, through which the Choctaw Indians ceded all of their land to white settlers. So we start in the historic part. Most of these houses are built in the late 1830s, 1840s. And then we walk to the campus, and we end there, and we go to several buildings. We go into one building that's usually unlocked, and It takes about an hour and 15 minutes, between an hour and 15, hour and 30 minutes, depending on how fast people walk.
And this is kind of like, did you say this is a public event?
Anybody can do it? It's a public event. It's free.
Oh, awesome. And, I hope you do that next year. I would like to come out and check that out.
Oh, I'd love to have you. Actually, I'll do it again in April. It is usually the third week of April. I'm not sure what the date is, but we have a folk festival called the Sukanachi Folk Festival. And at Saturday night, I always give a ghost tour. So I do these twice a year.
Have you ever had anything kind of interestingly paranormal take place during any of these tours?
Yes. Yes. I had a paranormal group, and they, all of them had cameras, and they were shooting all over the place. And a lot of them got orbs on the outside of buildings. A couple got orbs more toward the roof areas. Now, of course, this was at night, and there were bugs out, so could have been bugs, but these guys were aware of that, and they rejected the ones that they were pretty sure were bugs and focused on the ones that really looked like genuine orbs, and there were probably about five or six of them. I've been on ghost tours in other cities where they encourage people to take photographs, and down in San Antonio, they handed out dowsing rods to people so that they could, you know, ask questions, watch the rods move. I might try to do that possibly in the spring. I think that would be fun.
So you say, you know, you're talking about you do a lot of these tours and stuff like that. Have you ever gone out to any of these places, you know, just by yourself, get off by yourself so you can work on your writing and stuff like that, and then just try to experience it on your own?
Like for inspiration, I would assume?
Yeah. You know, I don't think I've ever done that. Every investigation I've done at my school has been with other people. For example, about eight or nine years ago, Meridian Group went to the library. And I went with them. We spent the night. I didn't have a whole lot of activity, but that's usually how I go about it. And I think it's probably because I like to have someone with me who can corroborate any personal experiences that we have.
Right. Let's go back to the book release process. I could kind of maybe equate that to, we're in a band, as I told you before, and we do a CD release, and when you get ready to release a new album or new medium or new book or anything, it's always a very long and trialsome process, and it's so gratifying when you finally have that piece of work in your hand. How long does that process typically look like from you, from the time that you say, I'm going to write a book, to the time that it's in your hand, about what ballpark? Does it vary greatly?
Well, it varies. Now, this last book, I had the luxury of just telling them when I thought I could get it into them. So I gave myself 6 months, and I finished it over the summer. I think I started in the spring. But there have been times when the Arcadia Press has called me up January, February, and said, Alan, we'd like for you to write a book on this part of the country, and you got to get it in by September, because they're very big on October deadlines, October releases.
Right.
I think this last book, the Golden Triangle book, I think I did that in 4 months. But that is every day, every evening. Every day at school, when I've got a spare time, it's all consuming. At least I find the process to be. And you have to get a rhythm. You got to get a rhythm going. Got to set yourself goals for every day. Get at least two or three pages every day. If you do that, you'll get it done.
Right.
You can't put it off. If you put it off, you'll just lag behind.
How far ahead of yourself do you try to stay? I mean, you just mentioned you're working on another book, and this one just came out. Do you are you always writing? Are you always working on a new book?
Pretty much, pretty much. And I'm at the stage in my life where my daughters are grown. They're married. They've got jobs. I've got two little grandsons that take up my time. But I've got a lot more time now than I used to have. And I'm 66. Probably work about five more years or so. I'm now doing this for fun, and it's relaxing. And I would say that if you don't enjoy what you're doing, and you shouldn't do it, it'll be work. I'm sure that for you, making music is fun.
Right.
Which means that cutting a CD would be fun, too. I love ghost stories. I love researching them, and it never gets old for me. And so the time just kind of, it's not that important.
Right.
Although I do like to have deadlines. I like deadlines. I work faster if I've got them.
You know, I'm kind of that way too. In fact, one of our old producers got really mad at me because I booked our CD release party before the album was finished, and he and that put a lot of more work on him. And I was like, well, if I don't do that, I'm afraid that I'll let it take longer than it should take if I didn't have that deadline hanging over my head.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
Well, I've been reading the book. I'm almost all the way through it. Germ here, I think you've completely finished it, haven't you?
Yeah, I've read through it.
Let's walk through it a little bit. I don't want to give away any spoilers because I want people to have to buy it. But I noticed right off the bat there's a lot of material in Columbus, Mississippi.
Yeah.
What makes Columbus? Yeah. I think the cover of the book, is that a picture of Callaway Hall? Am I right?
That's Callaway Hall. Columbus. I think the reason Columbus has so many ghost stories is because there's so many of those antebellum homes that were preserved.
Right.
Now, not all of them have ghosts, but a lot of them do. There are a lot of antebellum homes in Columbus that aren't in the book, and that's because there were no ghost stories connected with them. So that makes a huge difference. I was not able to find very many haunted places in Starkville. West Point's got, of course, Waverly. Oh, there were some other little towns like Aberdeen, Amory, but Columbus. Columbus has all the old houses. Which makes it very easy for someone like me to go on a spring pilgrimage of homes. When I went, I think I went to about eight or nine homes, and every house I went to, I asked the owners if they had any ghost stories, and most of them did. Now, I had done some research prior to going on the pilgrimage, so I knew which houses they wanted to go to. But that's really a haunted town. And that's one reason why I wanted to write the book, because no one had really done very much with Columbus's ghost stories at all. Waverly, yes. Waverly's been, its stories have been published quite a bit, but not Columbus, which really, really surprised me.
So you wrote about in your book about the Princess Theater.
Yes.
And having played there with the bands over the years, I can kind of vouch for it being haunted because of so many experiences and stuff that, you know, we had there over time.
I think the building was built in the, like, 1920s or something, wasn't it?
About 1924 or so, like that.
The Princess Theater, I've seen, you know, shadow figures and apparitions and stuff like that up in the balcony, you know, even when I'm on stage playing before. So I thought that one was really, really interesting. Did you actually go to the Princess Theater and check that out?
I did not, but I did talk to Ed Kuykendall, who is, I think, the grandson of the original owner. And he told me that he thinks the ghost is the spirit of a man that everybody in Columbus called the sidewalk superintendent. And I forget what his real name was. but he was kind of an eccentric individual who went to the cafe every day in the Princess Theater and drank coffee. And so he had this attachment to the place. I think in my book I said that it was Mr. Kuykendall who was haunting it, but after talking to Ed, now I'm beginning to reconsider, and I'm thinking it might be this other man.
Right. I've never actually done an investigation, you know, with my paranormal team there at the Princess Theater, because now it's really hard to get in there because they've turned it into more of a cafe, restaurant-style business. So they're trying to lean more toward that, which, you know, respectably so. I had never tried to really push it, but back in the day, we got to wander around in there a good bit, and I kind of wish I'd had a lot more of my paranormal equipment with me at that point.
There are some houses in Columbus that have allowed paranormal investigators to come in. One of them is the Highland House, which is built on the site of another house that burned. It burned in 1909, and the owner rebuilt it in 1910. And the owner, I believe it's a bed and breakfast, or has been a bed and breakfast. And the owner said that, let me see, she's heard the piano play, she smells cigar smoke, she had an antique doll collection, the dolls tend to move. And a ghost hunting group came and took a picture of a cracked mirror, and they saw a face. And the face was not the face of any of the investigators. And they actually took several pictures of the same mirror. They only got that one image. And I'm thinking that might be a place that someone else might want to investigate. It seemed that, in fact, Mrs. Holzhauer said that she didn't even like to go to the basement at all, that it had this bad vibe to it. I would think that would be a nice place to at least see about getting into.
Right.
I'd recommend it.
I did try to get a hold of a couple of these addresses that you had sent us in the email. You gave us a list of a few of the places in Columbus to check out, and either the numbers weren't working that I found on Google, or, you know, I had to go through the city of Columbus, you know, like the Welcome Center people, and try to find information. And now, a couple of them are strictly pretty well just bed and breakfast kind of stuff now, and I think one of them's under new ownership, and, you know, when they swap that around, you know, everybody's got a different role for everything, so.
Yeah.
But I'm still trying my best to get into some of these places.
Yeah, well, now, one of them, actually, there are two. The Amside Love House, owned by a man named Sid Carradine. You can go, if you call him up, you can make an appointment to take a tour of his house. I did that last December. And he might be receptive. He also owns the little house next door, the Lincoln home. And it was a carriage house at one time, a carriage house for the Amside Love House. Now, lots of things go on there. I'm thinking those two might be good places to check out.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to check out both of those.
How'd you say that? Amzi Love House?
Amzi
Love House. AMZI.
Okay. I spoke.
Love.
Gotcha.
Yes. And like I say, it's a bed and breakfast. The other house is a bed and breakfast. Mr. Carradine was more than happy to tell me his ghost story, which is pretty good. Pretty good. He said that a neighbor of his knocked on the door, and he'd been walking his dog, and he said that he saw the apparition of a woman walk through the door of the Amzi Love House, pass through his station wagon, Mr. Carradine's station wagon, and then float over to a big magnolia tree and just hovered there, and then floated into a wall of the Lincoln home next door.
Oh, wow.
And what's interesting is a woman in white has been seen several times inside the Lincoln home. So it makes you wonder if maybe she's just not visiting the other, the other house.
Yeah, exactly. I've been wanting to actually check out this Greg Hamilton house.
Yeah. like I say, I don't know the name of the lady who owns it, but I think that would be worth checking into.
All right.
I don't know if there's been any recent activity reported there or not.
Yeah, it's interesting that some of these places, just in doing the research that we do for the podcast to try to find a place to go, some of them are very open and very receptive to their paranormal history, and some of them really try to kind of push away from it and take and divert the attention away from that. I would think if you had, I mean, even from a business standpoint, I would say that's money in the bank if you've got a ghost. You know what I mean?
Well, I will say that most of the haunted bed and breakfast I've been to are happy to promote their ghost because, like you say, it's money in the bank. And they get, not only do they get people interested in history, but then they get this other crowd that's interested in the paranormal. So, There are some places where they don't talk about their ghost, and I have found that it's very difficult to get ghost stories from state park rangers in places like Civil War forts.
You like Shiloh and stuff,
right?
Yeah.
They won't talk about them for the most part. And I'm not saying all of them,
right?
Most of them won't, and it's because they're strictly history, and they want to focus on the history, and they don't want the distractions with the ghost stories. And I have not gotten very many stories at all from the park rangers. I've gotten them from other people, people who've been there and have had things happen to them.
Have you ever, it's the old Newt Knight. You know who I'm talking about? He was from Civil War era. Yeah, during that time period, there's a home that...
Decent home.
Yeah, the Decent home. Yeah, that's where I'm talking about.
Amos Decent.
Yeah. Have you been there and checked that place out?
I spent the night there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
With a local radio station from Meridian.
Uh-huh.
And, see, one of the ladies who runs it stayed with us, I think, she had to for legal reasons.
Right, yeah.
They also had this, we had this group of girls with us. I don't know if they were Girl Scouts. I don't quite remember. So they spent the night, too. And we had some, they got some activity, got some EVP. I heard the EVPs, and they weren't very clear.
Right. Now, my team did an investigation up there about a year ago or so. We had some pretty wild experiences ourselves, but we had another paranormal team from down around that area that they usually do like big benefit kind of things, try to help fundraise money for the upkeep of, you know, the old Decent home, you know. It's part through part of the historical society and stuff down there, I think, is who kind of helps keep that place up now. But that was a real interesting place there. I was kind of curious, you know, if you'd done it.
And,
you know, you say you spent the night there. It was just like, that put a big smile on my face. It's like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt privileged to be there. But, you know, with the publicity from the movie, the Free State of Jones, I would think that there'd be a lot of interest in that house now.
Yeah, exactly.
A whole lot.
You know, you were talking about history earlier. To me, you can't have one without the other. Like, you've got the paranormal stuff that goes on in a place. You can't really investigate the paranormal without investigating the history and vice versa. And through this process of doing the podcast and investigating these places, I've become really, really attached and interested in history in general. And
I'm very glad to hear you say that, because that's the approach I take, and I agree with you 100%. You have to do your research. Otherwise, you're missing out on possible explanations for paranormal activity.
Exactly.
You know, just the history of the structural history of the building. I can recall reading about a ghost that appeared to be moving on the floor. Like it was like a the head and the torso were on the floor moving. And then I found out that like 50 years, 60 years before, they had raised the floor of the house. So that the ghost was walking on the old floor.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
And if you hadn't done the history, that would be a complete mystery to you.
Right.
So, yes, I agree. All research teams should have at least one person who will do the take the time, go to the libraries or surf the net and find out as much as they can about the house before they actually go in.
Right, a good case in point, and this ties back into your book. This is a good segue. Before we did the Gulf Ordnance Plant, I've consulted with a Civil War historian because a lot of the reports I was hearing about the hauntings of the Ordnance Plant was not necessarily of things that happened while the Ordnance Plant was in operation. There was a couple things, but most of the hauntings that I was hearing about had to do with Civil War soldiers that people saw there. And before I went out there and said, hey, this place is haunted with Civil War ghosts, I wanted to make sure that that's historically plausible. So I consulted what I definitely would say is an expert on the Civil War. And he told me, he said, yes, there were skirmishes that came through there. There was the Battle of Ellis Bridge, which is not far from there. And there were little offshoot side battles that took place with it. It's very plausible that, and almost definite that there's loss of life in the Civil War in that area.
Yeah. Battle of Okolona, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely Okolona.
Oh, yeah. And, well, now, there was a report of a woman who was working security. She called up her sister. She was frantic, and she said that she walked into a room, and she saw a nurse and a soldier in a gray uniform, and he had a bandage on his head. And the vision didn't last very long before it dissipated. But other people have seen Civil War soldiers. And again, that you have to do your research so that you'll fully understand what's going on and what these people are seeing. In my research, I found that only two people died in the Gulf Ordnance Munitions Plant. One guy was hit by a train on his way to work. Another guy was sprayed in one of the cookers. They were cooking the TNT in the three-story building.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the only two deaths really connected to that, which amazes me. So there were 10,000 people working there. But yeah, you're right. It's it's most likely those Civil War ghosts that are active in that site.
One interesting thing about the Ordnance Plant, and it didn't dawn on me until... until I was there and I did the interview with Mr. Brent Coleman. When I did an interview with him, that's when it kind of clicked. The reason there's not a lot of documented history about the Ordnance Plant is because it was kind of a secret. They didn't want the enemy to know where they were making the bombs. And I guess that makes sense. You know, and that's one of the reasons they chose that location out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And you don't get a lot of history about the place that's documented. There's probably things that happen that we'll never know just because it was kind of a secret.
Oh, yeah, and it's amazing to me they could keep a big operation like that secret the way they did.
Yeah, that it was like a city they erected.
Yeah, but there were other plants similar to that one scattered throughout the South. And like you say, they were in these very isolated areas where you know, a lot of people didn't pass through.
In the Gulf Ordnance Plant, it goes on for a long ways. It's acres and acres and acres of... there's underground passageways, tunnels and stuff where they used to ship from like one docking area to another, back and forth and all this. A lot of that stuff is all grown up out through there now, but... Mark knows from experience, when you go out there, you definitely want to have good walking shoes on.
I'll bet.
Yeah, it's definitely a big spread out area.
Are there a lot of artifacts on the ground, a lot of nails, pieces of wood?
Oh, yeah, it's ruins, though. Matter of fact, we had to sign lengthy waivers and disclaimers and stuff to be out there from a legal standpoint because the buildings are in ruins, they're collapsing. I mean, some of those buildings could fall at any time. The ones that are left that haven't fallen, that is. And but yeah, I mean, there's artifacts and stuff out there all over the place. We actually want to go back eventually. We didn't want to rehash it this year because we just did it last year. But now that I've kind of got the feel of the place and I know that we can go out there and have free reign as far as the podcast is concerned, I wouldn't mind in the next year or two maybe revisiting that because it was so interesting and there's so much to cover there.
Yeah. Yeah. If you go, give me a call.
I'll do it.
I'd love to go out there.
This year, we're exploring Athens Jailhouse. Athens used to be the county seat of Monroe County where we live. And I really like that there's like a lot of historically like kind of famous haunted places around here because I like to explore them first. And sure. There's a lot of history there because it's the last standing structure of that entire town from back when, yep. Gosh, when was that?
It was 1830.
It was 1830,
when it was the first jail.
Yeah.
It was actually built before then.
Then the new one was built in 1845. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That sounds like a great place.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. That's going to be on our next show for sure.
Well, I'll tell you, if you all want to go to really, really haunted house, we have an Annabella mansion here in Meridian called Merrill Hope. It survived one of the few buildings to survive the Civil War, to survive Sherman's Valentine's Day visit to Meridian. And they do allow paranormal groups to come in. I think they charge them a little bit. But last week I did two television shows at that site.
Oh, wow.
One was for a local TV station and the other was Walt Grayson came. He does the Mississippi Roads segment on Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
Right.
He came, and I talked to him for a couple of hours about it, and I spent the night there twice. That's a very active site. And if you want to go, just give me a buzz. I'll talk to the ladies who own it, and we'll get it set up.
How about next October, we go ahead and plan on it now, Kill Pop Culture, Dr. Alan Brown together again, and we make a night of it?
Yes, get back to me, and, I can put you, I can give you the phone number of the lady who is in charge of the women's group who owns it. It's called the Meridian Restoration Project. And they, like I say, they own it, and they love having paranormal groups coming in. That's a good example of a historic home that wants people to know about their ghosts so that more tours will come and help pay for the upkeep of the place. Yeah, if you can find yourself a house like that, then you're going to be in hog heaven. Believe me, it is really, really active.
Sounds like a road trip to me.
Yeah, everybody heard it here first. Let's make it official. We're going to do that next October. We got a whole year to plan it. We've been looking for a place. And, you know, you really do have to plan these things almost a year in advance because there's a lot of stuff to work out and logistics and everything. But I definitely want to put that on the list, seriously. I think it'll be great.
Oh, yes. Yes. Now, I'll tell you another place in Columbus, the Amory House. Rick and Bubba, the Rick and Bubba Show, sent a paranormal group there. And the story goes that in the gentleman's parlor of the Amory House, if you hang the picture of a woman on the wall the next day when you go in, the picture will be lying on the floor or on a table or chair. And so they tried it. And they put a woman's picture on the wall and just sat there and waited for something to happen. Well, all of a sudden, the motion detector went off. And there was nothing had walked past it. And then, not long thereafter, a cat walked in the doorway, arched its back and snarled, and wouldn't go in. And so they concluded that the stories about the Amory House were true. I think I'd want a little more evidence than that, but... but that would be a good place to go. Because, I say, they have had paranormal groups there before.
Yeah, we'll definitely check that out, too. Before we go, tell us a little bit about some more of the appearances you have coming up. I know you mentioned the tour you're doing this coming weekend. Do you have any other signings and appearances you have lined up you want to promote?
Well, most of them are over now. I've got one November 2nd. November 2nd in West Point at the Public Library. It's at noon.
At what time?
At noon. And I'm giving a PowerPoint presentation on my book, and I'm selling books as well, so I'll be happy to sign one for anyone who's interested.
I will mark November 2nd on the calendar. West Point's not that far from here. We may try to make that.
Good.
Is that on a weekend? What? No, it's a Wednesday. Is
this a Wednesday? It's a Wednesday. Yeah. Yeah, that's the next one I've got coming up.
Okay, awesome. Well, tell us where all we can go to get all our listeners. I know where I can go get the book. I have one in my hand. But I know Amazon, you can get it there. Where else places can people go buy this book?
Okay. There's a gift shop in Columbus called Hollyhocks. It's on Fifth Street in Columbus. I did a book signing there. In fact, that was the first one I did for my book. That was in late September. They have a lot of copies, and I signed them.
Oh, cool.
So you can go there and get a signed copy. Hollyhocks is also in my book, too, because it's on it. And now, I think there's a Barnes & Noble in Columbus. I'm not positive about that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they did open one up in the last year or so.
Really? Would that be in the mall? I think there's one in the mall, isn't there? The Columbus... What do they call it? The Lee Mall?
The Lee Mall?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's there or what.
Yeah. Well, they didn't contact me about doing a book signing. That's not to say they don't have the book. It's possible that they do. But I know Hollyhocks has it.
And as far as online, I mean, you can go to Amazon. I'm sure you can go to Arcadia.
Oh, sure.
Arcadia Publishing, sure. And order it.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing about Amazon is that... a lot of my books tend to go pretty fast. Now, that's a good problem to have, but if you, they'll say like two left in stock, three left in stock, and so if you're interested in getting it from Amazon, you probably need to get it while they still have them.
I'm looking at the Arcadia Publishing page now, and it looks like, if I'm reading this correctly, you can get it on ebook as well.
Yes.
Like on your Kindle, on your Nook, yes. Google Play, iBooks.
Yes, you can.
Oh, cool. Yep. Okay. Well, everybody definitely needs to go out right now if you haven't already and get a copy of that book. I've been reading it. Germ's already read it. It is a great book. And it's an easy read. It's not a difficult book to read. And you have pictures, too. I think that's important.
Oh, nuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went nuts with my camera. Because so many of these people let me come inside and take pictures, so that was fun.
That's really cool. Well, we definitely appreciate you calling in and taking a few minutes to talk to us. Good luck with the rest of the book tour. We hope you sell a whole bunch of copies, and we'll definitely stay in touch throughout the year, and let's make this a yearly thing.
Oh, that would be great. And be sure to get in touch with me about doing Marahope next October.
Absolutely. It's a date.
Great. Great. All right. Well, thanks a lot for having me on your show.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks again. You have a good evening.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our good friends and sponsors of this show, Shadow Stalkers Paranormal from Amory, Mississippi.
This isn't your average paranormal thing.
Shadow Stalkers is a nonprofit group that hosts fundraisers for families in need, and they also host fundraisers for historical sites.
Their fundraisers and paranormal investigations are open to the public, and they encourage everyone not to just watch, but to join in.
Look them up on Facebook and feel free to shoot them a message if you have any questions.
They are here to assist you with any paranormal needs you may have.
That's Shadow Stalkers Paranormal. Go search for them on Facebook and check them out. That's Shadow Stalkers Paranormal.
Go search for them on Facebook and check them out.
That was a song called Coffin Case that we recorded back in 2007. That's like 11,000 years ago.
It's almost been 10 years.
Yeah. That's from the Leave Me Alone EP. Another interesting tidbit about that song is that we wrote Coffin Case 2 and it's never been released. It's never been recorded or anything. Well, it kind of got demoed, but it never got released. And we even had the idea back then of doing a Halloween EP. And we were going to do Coffin Case 1, 2, and 3, which I never even finished writing 3. And we were going to do a cover of the Misfits song Halloween and do it as a Halloween EP. Who knows, if we get enough interest, enough response, if people start saying, hey, that sounds like a good idea, you should do it. Who knows what the future holds. But anyway, I might do it as loud as you did. Just a gentle little shameless promotion, Bill. Enough of this Killjay talk. Let's move on to the next whatever of the show. Probably, I don't know.
Commercial! Those new band shirts look awesome. Where did you get those done?
At Anarchy Design.
They do screen printing now?
Oh yeah, they do professional custom screen printing at a very competitive rate.
Well, where can I find them?
Look them up on Facebook, facebook.com/anarchydesign69, or email them at anarchydesign69@gmail.com. You can check out some of their work on their Facebook page. When you're ready to order, you can send them your idea, or they can design it for you. It's a one-stop shop for all your screen printing needs. That's anarchydesign69@gmail.com. It's a one-stop shop for all your screen printing needs. That's anarchydesign69@gmail.com.
So once again, everybody, go grab a copy of that book. If you want to try to win one for free here, if you listen to the beginning of the show, you know how to do it. I'm glad I remembered this. I actually know very little about how the rating system works on Podomatic, but I do know that on iTunes, our last 3 episodes were the top 3 most played episodes of Kill Pop Culture so far. How cool is that?
That's applause to you.
That makes
guys.
Me. That rejuvenates my. That really rejuvenates me. I feel rejuvenated.
He's like a little young boy, a little lad.
You guys really like us, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, give yourself a round of applause.
You deserve it. And you know, if you really want to further the calls, be sure to give us like that 4 or 5 star rating or whatever it is in iTunes, and leave a comment, a good one. If you're going to leave a bad one, then...
No cake for you.
No cake for you, buddy. Thanks again to Dr. Alan Brown. I think we've got our... I do believe we've got our Halloween special set up for next year. I like being prepared.
Yes.
You're going to be stuck with us for at least another year, people. Come to That So Sick Fest. It starts tonight.
Tonight.
Sorry. Not really. Hey, are you going to the Chili Fest thing in Amory?
When?
Halloween night. It's like this big chili cook-off thing.
How much is it?
I think it's... I don't know. It's not that expensive. It's like $8 or something like that. There's an event page on Facebook.
Seems like I did hear about that.
At this point, we're just talking to each other.
It's okay. No, our listeners are still kind of zoning in and out. Kind of like I do when I hear myself talk. I very well may. Oh.
Dude, I'm gonna eat some chili.
Do you think we could talk them into putting wrestling on the big screen?
Oh, that's right. That's Monday night.
Well, I gotta take kids trick-or-treating first anyway, but we're doing it early. And I only go to like 5 houses because I don't want like this really big ton of candy for my kids to devour in 2 days' time and get sick.
We could TiVo it. Not DVR it, but TiVo it.
Okay, so we're just going to have a late Monday Night Raw night.
Exactly.
How's that any different from any other Monday night?
Yeah. All right, well, in case we don't see you before then, happy Halloween. Come to see us at That's So Sick Fest. And love you. Bye.
Love you, mean it.
Please let me. If something's going to happen here, I want it to happen to me first.
It's the closet.
I hate this. I like to torture him.
Maybe.
That's right, boys. It's Dr. Venkman.